This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name's Adam and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is and what AA can do to help. Then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting. Take it away, guest.
My name's Ruth and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Ruth.
AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks, Ruth. So, what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince me that I do not have it. However, once it got a hold of me, the progression of symptoms was like the classic disease model, and I became as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic like me, you may be at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognize it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is that it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having that first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and I lose control over when I will stop drinking. The old saying goes, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. Yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This makes me powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics like me to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Hi there, for anyone who has just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. We're just about to interview an AA member who is going to share her experience with alcoholism with us. So let's meet our guest. Hello, guest. Would you like to introduce yourself and give us a quick sketch of who you are?
My name's Ruth and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello.
What would you like to know, Adam?
How old are you?
Oh, for goodness sake. I am 70 years old.
Yes. And how long have you been sober?
I've been sober since January the 1st, 1998.
Yes. So 22 years over.
just, yeah, 22 years and 10 months and 10 days.
Wow, that's precision. And what's your occupation?
I do relieving work for school after being a school teacher all my life.
I see. And do you have a family?
I had a daughter born in 1976 who left home when she was 15 to go and live in the hood because of her mother's drunkenness and debauchery. And and currently we live on the same property. She's married that guy. They have a son and he's 19 and he's never seen me drink. And so those two children are now growing at middle age, really, probably. And they've been together for 27 years.
That's fantastic.
Tell you.
Where are you from?
Where
did you grow up?
I was born in Burwood Hospital. And we lived in Rafiti Avenue in Brighton.
Yes.
And then moved to St. Albans when I was 7 years old.
I see.
And we...
How was your childhood?
Fantastic.
Yep.
Except for the two brothers who became the Golden Head Wonder Boys, and I was the poor, lonely, sad git of a daughter in my perception. That is my perception.
So in your perception, it's not true. An alien in your family.
Oh, girl. Just a girl.
Right. So you talked about your drinking affecting your child, your teenage child's happiness. Would you please tell us when you started drinking and how it progressed, Ruth?
My dad, bless him, he drank every night. Mm. He went to the Caledonian straight after work, and in those days it was 6 o'clock closing. He would come home, he would go into the bedroom, he'd put his slippers on, he'd come out and he'd say to Mother, "Would you like a wiki, dear?" And she'd say, "If you're having a beer, dear." And he would have a half G and three bottles of beer and some red wine with his meal. And I never saw that man drunk. And so we grew up, the boys and I, grew up with being surrounded by alcohol every day. And so it just seemed natural that we follow suit. The boys drank beer and I drank wine. And Mother would say, "You don't have to match them glass for glass, dear. You're drinking 14% and they're drinking whatever beer is." And it didn't make any difference. I just continued to drink like that, and on a daily basis.
Right. So how old were you when you started?
Oh, maybe 18. Oh, 17, 18.
17, 18.
Mm.
And what did it do for you?
What it did for me was I was told right throughout my life that I was born with a chip on my shoulder and a frown on my face.
Right.
And so... as I grew older, I had chips on both shoulders, and the frown on my face, I think, was probably because I was thinking about all those what I now can name as self-centered fears, fear of failure. I was a competitive athlete and a competitive cricket player, and so we used to play. I played senior women's cricket at what is Melvin Park next to Rugby Park, and so I would bat at the cricket and go next door to Rugby Park and run. But if I couldn't win the race that I was running in, I would break the gun and be disqualified. And on the cricket scene, I was named in the Canterbury cricket team. But that was obviously a mistake. They made a mistake when they named that team, because why would they pick me? Because in my head, I'm not good enough. I'm not capable enough to represent. So, okay.
So not necessarily a very accurate self-appraisal. but back to your drinking. So how did you drink? You said you drank daily.
I drank every day till I passed out.
Right.
Every day till I passed out.
Until you passed out.
Yep.
Thank you.
Sorry, that was a bit long-winded.
So did you ever feel it was a problem?
Never.
Did you ever try to stop?
I tried to stop one time.
Uh-huh.
The man that I married had, he had taken his own life through this disease. And at the time I was 97 kilos, so I'm quite a large kind of woman. And I was teaching the bunny hop to a whole pile of kids at school. And I was rendered, I'd put my back out.
Right.
Which rendered me unable to walk. Mm-hmm. And so I'm lying in Southern Cross Hospital and I make this list that says I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to walk again, mm-hmm. I'm going to buy a new house, I'm going to sell this old house, and I'm going to stop drinking.
Okay, so how did that go for you?
How did it go?
The stopping drinking
part.
I'm just interested in that.
Yes, but it's relevant. It's relevant because I went out of Southern Cross Hospital, down Billy Ave, and into the Caledonian Road.
Uh-huh, so wasn't a decision that you were able to maintain?
Well, it was for 400 metres.
Uh-huh. So what made you realise that you needed help? Did you have a rock bottom?
Yeah, last public display of drunkenness was 29th of November.
Yes.
1997, at a work Christmas do.
Yes.
The last thing I remember doing is the Barbie dance.
Right.
And then I came to the following morning having completely covered in bruises, and it had taken three people to get me into the car, to get me home, and to get me inside.
How did you feel?
Beside my bed was seven pieces of notepaper from an epistle my daughter had written, telling me exactly what she thought about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
how did you feel when you read the epistle?
Oh, I think I'll go to Alcoholics Anonymous.
Uh-huh.
So.
And yes, you went to AA.
No, you didn't.
You didn't go. You thought you would go.
I thought I would go, but okay. I couldn't go. I couldn't go on the Sunday, which was the 30th of November. On the 1st of December, I started ringing Alcoholics Anonymous. So Monday, the 1st of December, 1997, mm-hmm. and the lady on the phone said, if you want to stop drinking, we will help you. If you don't, carry on. And I thought she was an insensitive cow.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted me to go to a meeting. I said, I can't go to a meeting in December.
Too busy.
Well, I had a wedding anniversary and it was Mum's birthday, Dad's birthday, lots of other days that end in mm-hmm. Y, Christmas Day, Boxing Day, New Year's
Eve. Busy.
Oh, way too busy.
Mm.
But I kept ringing every night, asking for the same lady. Had to get through. You had to go be put through to whoever you wanted. And every night she'd say the same thing. If you want to stop drinking, we'll help you. If you don't, carry on. So then I did. I came on the 1st of January 1998. Never had a drink since.
How was that? How was that
How
first
was
meeting?
It? Yeah. The first meeting that I ever went to was I heard a lady laugh, and I thought, sweet to laugh about that I can see in this place.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lady who said a word that started with F, and I'd never heard anyone say it quite like that before.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a higher power standing on the steps. And so those were the three things that were things outside myself. The things that were inside myself was the man that I sat next to, and he was in the same job as me, and he asked me if I was willing to go to any lengths. Said I was, and he said spiritual life is not a theory, you have to live it. I didn't have a clue what that meant either.
Mm-hmm.
But I went home that night, and for the first time in 25 years on a daily basis, I hadn't passed out or hadn't had alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was miraculous. I thought it was a miracle from God. That's what I thought.
Mm. So you haven't had a drink for a few days now after that first day. How have you managed to stay sober, Ruth? Would you please describe the process of recovery, your recovery?
My recovery, I thought, we went every day. There were two other girls. There were two other girls there, so we all started on the same day.
Yeah.
So I've got two other sisters in sobriety. Neither of them were in the fellowship anymore, and neither of them are sober. And what I did was we went to meetings every single day. And what I heard you say was, "Don't drink, go to meetings." That's what I heard you say.
And when you say saying you at the moment, do you mean the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous?
Yeah.
Yes.
What I heard the people in the meetings say,
yes,
don't drink, go to meetings.
Mm.
My life didn't get any better. It got worse. I was just horrific because I didn't have anything that enabled me to live life as you all did. And then I went to a Southern Area Assembly in Kaikoura. And what I heard was, don't drink, go to meetings, work these steps.
Right. Okay.
That's not to say it wasn't said at every other meeting I went to, but it's not what I
That's
heard.
That's when you heard it.
Yeah.
On that occasion.
Yeah.
And so I've heard about these steps, and they're described as an action program for life for people in 12-step fellowships. And so... I'm assuming that you've worked those steps.
Every single day, every part of every day, without ceasing.
Aha, so this helps you cope with life?
Oh.
With difficulties as they come up?
I don't even know, Adam, the last time I had a difficulty. Because on awakening, if I, the first thing I do is I thank God for the gift of sleep. Because I don't pass out anymore. You know, I thank God for the miracle of sobriety and the manageability of my life. I thank God for restoring me to sanity. I thank God for helping me make the decision to turn my will and my life over to His care. Mm. I am completely ready, repeatedly ready, entirely ready, all the adverbs if you want to carry on, absolutely, totally, yes, honestly, yes, and ruthlessly.
Ready.
Ready.
Pun intended.
Yes. To have God remove the defects in my character.
I see. And for anyone listening, in the 12-step fellowships in AA, one can have a God of one's own understanding, so that does not have to be religious at all. That is a higher power of one's understanding. That's incredible. How important has service been as part of your recovery, Ruth?
My first Thursday in fellowship, they asked me to be the biscuit monitor.
I see. And what did that mean? You
that mean I had to...
one biscuit per person?
No, I was allowed
gave corporal punishment if anyone tried to take two biscuits.
I was allowed to go and buy the biscuits for the group.
Yes.
And so I was so overwhelmed with excitement because somebody had asked me to do something. And I don't think that man realises the enormity of it. I didn't want to have anything to do with people. So my service can be go and buy biscuits. I've been numerous positions of treasurer, group treasurer.
Yes.
I've been group treasurer. I've been to the prisons. I've been... treasurer for Southern Area Assembly. I can do, you know, because you don't have to talk to people. All you have to do.
Yeah. Good.
So
you can offer practical support in ways that don't necessarily involve face-to-face.
Yeah.
Or intensive face-to-face.
I was incapable of it. I didn't know how to do communicate. I didn't know how to have a conversation.
Yes.
I couldn't string. I could say, do you come here often?
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I mean... here we are in an interview on the radio, and this is a rich conversation. So I'm guessing that there have been some changes that have occurred within yourself since you got sober.
Through having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps,
yes,
my life has changed. Sometimes I don't even know myself. Mm. People who work at at school now, they don't know that person. That person that went before them in the same workplace, they don't know them. In the family unit, you know, I was just saying before this, I've loved my girl since the day when she was born, but I didn't have the skills. If you asked her what AA had given me, she would say the ability to hug and hold, the ability to say I love you, the ability to give without having to be materialistic to, well, what am I going to get in return for this, and the ability to, and none of it is material. It's all spiritual. So the spiritual principles of the fellowship, you know, it's the AA has taught me to keep my mouth shut and not to say everything I think.
Mm. Oh, this is just very, very encouraging to hear. Going forward, what are your goals for the future, Ruth?
The future. My future don't extend very far. The furthest I've got as a goal is that on Friday morning I'm going to Bluff to celebrate the 40th AA birthday of a friend that I've met through service through the southern area.
Marvellous.
A group of people are going, you know, and for me, you know, in 2015 I went to the World Convention. Yep. Now to go from Goldfish Bowl to World Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous is mind-blowing, really, for someone like me.
The scope of your life has increased.
You know, I had
dramatically.
I had home, his home, school, bottle store, home, home, school, bottle store, home.
Ruth, thank you so much for sharing the transformation that has occurred for you through your work in Alcoholics Anonymous and coming on the show and sharing your story with us.
Thank you, Adam. It's been a pleasure to be here.
For our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are over 60 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show is every Monday at 5:30 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can also find podcasts of our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz, or you can download, subscribe and listen to podcasts on iTunes and Spotify. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening. And remember, if you want to drink, that's your business. But if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We will now close the show with the Serenity Prayer, as we do in every AA meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.